This is VOA News. I'm Steve Miller. The Islamic State group's leader has appeared in a video for the first time in 5 years. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
In the video released by the group's propaganda arm, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi is seen with a bushy gray and red beard, sitting on the floor with what appears to be a machine gun next to him. It's the first time he's been seen on video since giving a sermon in 2014 at a mosque in Mosul, which a few years later was badly damaged as Iraqi forces took on al-Baghdadi's militants. The site intelligence group says he acknowledged in the video that they lost the fight for their last stronghold in Syria, and also discussed the recent Sri Lanka bombings, for which the group claimed responsibility. Sagar Magani, Washington.
U.S. officials have not verified the authenticity of the video. Japanese Emperor Akihito will step down on Tuesday in an unusual move that stunned the Japanese public, because typically emperors reign until death. Reuters' Grace Lee explains Akihito's decision.
At 85 years old, Akihito has had heart surgery and been treated for prostate cancer. Ultimately, he says he's afraid he can't carry out his duties as a monarch, and many Japanese sympathize with him, but not everyone.
When the crown prince ascends to the throne tomorrow, Japan will celebrate with a lengthy holiday of 10 days straight with markets closed. More rain is forecast for northern Mozambique, where the death toll from Cyclone Kenneth has jumped to 38 as flooding and pounding rains hampered efforts to deliver aid to badly hit communities several days after the storm. An estimated 160,000 people are at risk from the second most powerful cyclone to hit the southern African nation in just 6 weeks. Aid workers have described the area as total devastation. This is VOA News. Spain's ruling socialists were weighing options for forming a new government on Monday after they won a national election but fell short of a majority in a deeply fragmented parliament that could spell prolonged political uncertainty. Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez is weighing his party's options, and Reuters' Isla Bini is in Madrid with more.
Pedro Sanchez has not put his cards on the table and committed to anything at this point. He even said when he came out to speak to his supporters on Sunday night, very elated from the result, because he did win a good couple of million votes more than the nearest political force that was behind him. He said that he wouldn't put up what in Spanish politics is often called a safety cordon around any options.
That was Reuters' Isla Bini. The deputy prime minister said on Monday that the socialists will try to govern alone. A plot to bomb a Nazi rally has been thwarted in Southern California. AP correspondent Tim McGuire reports.
The Joint Terrorism Task Force in the Los Angeles area stopped a would-be pressure cooker bombing of a Nazi rally planned for Long Beach, California on Sunday. U.S. Attorney Nick Hanna says Army veteran Mark Domingo, who converted to Islam, wanted revenge for the New Zealand mosque attacks. He adds that an undercover officer had been working with Domingo, who thought he was getting a number of improvised explosive devices. I'm Tim McGuire.
Anguish, pain, and heartache poured out of Rabbi Israel Goldstein Sunday as he recounted the terrorist shooting at a synagogue near San Diego that killed a woman and left him and two others wounded. U.S. Special Envoy Ilan Carr offered his condolences to the family and friends of Lori Kay.
I'm here today not only on behalf of my boss, Secretary Pompeo, but on behalf of President Trump and the entire administration in bringing you the deepest and most heartfelt condolences of the president and all our national leaders.
The rabbi appealed to all Jews to go to their synagogues this Friday night, the start of the Jewish Sabbath, to show solidarity and that terrorism will never prevail. Police in Bangladesh say security forces killed at least two people suspected of belonging to an Islamist militant group behind the 2016 attack on a Dhaka cafe. Police say they raided a hideout suspected of belonging to Jamaat-ul-Mujahideen Bangladesh early Monday in the capital's Bosilla neighborhood after receiving a tip. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo says Washington's decision to end Iran oil waivers to China will not have a negative impact on the latest trade talks between the two world's leading economies. China is Iran's largest oil buyer. Pompeo added that the United States would ensure the global oil markets are adequately supplied. I'm Steve Miller, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Botte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, April 30th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Uganda MP and popular musician Bobby Wine remains defiant even after the government jailed him on Monday.
My spirit is confident, Your Honor, because I am here not because I've stolen public funds or I've killed somebody. I am glad that I'm here because I'm fighting for them, for you, Your Honor, for everybody in this country.
That's Ugandan parliamentarian Bobby Wine. South Sudan will pay $3.7 million to a U.S.-based lobbying firm to block the establishment of a hybrid court. And the Sudanese opposition party proposes its own measures towards creating a transitional government.
One, the transitional constitution, which will govern the transitional period, and the proposal for the government duties. And also we submitted names for the cabinet.
That's Dr. Bashir Adam Rahman of the Opposition Popular Congress Party of Sudan. And a Liberian American Colonization Society official visits the birthplace of Liberia's first president in the United States. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Ugandan opposition lawmaker Robert Chakulayi, better known as the singer Bobby Wine, has been taken to prison and charged with unlawful assembly for participating in a protest in July last year without police authorization. Police spokesman Fred Enenga said the director of public prosecutions decided to finally bring charges after months of investigations. Bobby Wine's arrest on Monday followed battles between the police and his supporters, with police firing tear gas to disperse the crowds. Halima Atumani reports from Kampala.
Bobby Wine was whisked off Monday to a maximum security prison in Kampala. He later appeared at the Buganda Road Magistrates Court, where the state alleged that on July 11, 2018, Bobby Wine and several others still at large disobeyed Sections 5 and 10 of the Public Order Management Act by holding a public meeting without adhering to the required criteria. His lawyer, Benjamin Katana, said he was charged with unlawful assembly related to a protest that took place in 2018 against taxes on mobile money transfers and internet access. When asked to say something, Wine told the court that he did not commit any crime.
I'm only here because I disagree with the political leadership of this country, and in particular, President Museveni. But my spirit is confident, Your Honor, because I am here not because I've stolen public funds or have killed somebody. I am glad that I'm here because I'm fighting for them, for you, Your Honor, for everybody in this country. I'm here for protesting against unfair taxation and against injustice.
The Public Order Management Act requires anyone intending to carry out a protest to inform the police beforehand. However, many meetings and peaceful protests by members of the opposition have been blocked by police, who insist the protesters must seek advance permission, something the law does not require. Opposition political parties have started a process to review the act. Earlier Monday, police used tear gas and warning shots to disperse dozens of Bobby Wine supporters who were escorting him to appear before the Criminal Investigations Department. But along the way, officers took Wine out of his car and into a waiting police van. Agitated and angry, Chifampa Siraj was among the crowd demanding for Bobby Wine to be freed.
Many Ugandans are going through a lot of hardships, and this is what Bobby Wine is singing about. Why should they deploy all these heavy machinery and whatever, blocking him from speaking to his people? So the fact that the government knows what he's doing, why should the government block him from singing?
Wine's lawyer says he makes his next court appearance on Thursday. Halima Athmani for VA News, Kampala.
Sudan's opposition Popular Congress Party says it does not support the agreement between other opposition groups and the ruling military council to form a transitional government. Rather, the party says it has presented to the military council fresh proposals to expedite Sudan's quick transition to democratic rule. The proposals include a Christian from the Numba Mountains as new prime minister and independent Sudanese, including women, as members of the transitional government. Dr. Bashir Adam Rahman is the deputy general secretary of the Opposition Popular Congress Party.
We have submitted proposals according to the request of the Transitional Military Council on three things. One, the transitional constitution, which will govern the transitional period, and the proposal for the government duties. And also we submitted names for the cabinet, which we think it should be from independent Sudanese, from inside Sudan and outside Sudan, and that anyone who is in the transitional government should not contest the next elections. For the prime minister, we propose a Christian from the Nuba Mountains, and we think Sudan is multicultural, multiracial, and multireligious, and it is high time that we should, what we advocate in our literature should be a reality.
Is your party, the PCP, against the agreement signed between the other opposition groups and the military council? Because it looks like that appears to be the way forward, and you could be left behind with your non-approval.
No, you know, now the people who are negotiating with the Transitional Military Council, they are representing all the Sudan. Actually, these are the people who are now having some of their followers in front of the headquarters of the military of Sudan. And they are making pressure on the military council and saying that they have the sole authority to choose all the governing bodies through the transitional period. And that is not true. We in the Popular Congress Party, we have played a very major role. We have been in opposition to the government of Omar al-Bashir since 2000.
So let
we don't want some people to dictate on us what they can, what they say, and we want all the political parties in Sudan to convene and agree on all the issues of the transitional period.
Does that mean that you will not be bound by the agreement signed between the other opposition groups and the military council, and you think the military council want to dictate how the transitional period should be?
The transitional period is now under pressure from the people who are in front of the headquarters. And he would like those people just to disperse. And if they disperse, even if he has an agreement with the leaders of these groups, I don't think he will honor them. Because Mr. Burhan, who is now the head of the TMC, saying that we cannot have a deal with only one faction. And he is saying that this is on television yesterday on Al Hadas TV, which is a Saudi TV station. He said, yes, the professionals are major, that is party to the revolution, but that they are not the sole, and we have to discuss with all other parties. So that is why we are now calling for an all Sudanese parties, intellectuals, and also professionals to sit down and to agree on a way out for the transitional period.
So when do you expect, or when does your party expect the military council to respond to your proposal? Because it appears that you are on a different trajectory, and why do you think the military council should approve of your proposal when it has just agreed principally with other opposition groups and the Sudanese worker groups?
Actually, change. That is groups. They have now a loud voice because they are depending on the demonstrators or the revolutionaries who are now in front of the military headquarters. But they are not alone. There are so many parties. For instance, the DUP, that is the Democratic Unionist Party, who is one of the major parties that is led by Mr. Mawlana Muhammad Osman al-Marghani, who is the sect of Khatmiya, is not part of that. So many other groups who have been joining the late government due to the dialogue resolutions. They are not part of it. Even the Ummah Party, led by Sadiq al-Mahdi, is having now an independent track with the Transitional Military Council. So these are not representing all the Sudanese political spectrum.
Dr. Bashir Adam Rahman is the Deputy General Secretary of the Opposition Popular Congress Party. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotty from the Sudanese capital, Khartoum. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, April 30th. And please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. We send shout out to listeners on all of our VOA affiliate stations in Africa. Daybreak Africa time, 16 minutes past the hour. The government of South Sudan will pay close to $4 million to a U.S.-based lobbying firm to repair relations with the United States to delay and ultimately block the establishment of hybrid court, among other things. The firm is managed by Michael Renneberger, a former U.S. ambassador to Kenya, but Gordon Bue, South Sudanese ambassador to the United States, who signed the agreement, said his government has not transferred the money.
The U.S. and South Sudan have been friends for a long time, but when the war broke out, then the relations were sour. But we are still friends, so we need to go back to the same relationship between the two countries.
Bue confirmed that the government of South Sudan will pay Gainful Solutions $3.7 million to execute the terms of the agreement.
Yeah, but you have the Gainful Solution. We have a time limit of paying them. I cannot tell you we'll pay them tomorrow after 3 days. It is confidential.
Ambassador Bue says South Sudan initiated the contact with Gainful Solutions to improve bilateral relations with South Sudan, and that there is no reason for anyone to feel frustrated over the contract.
Frustration from who? What we are doing is to ensure that a bilateral relations between the United States and South Sudan is normalized and goes back to the pre-war period. And not only that, our main concern, we want American companies to come and invest in South Sudan.
Bue says the agreement, which has been circulated widely online, is authentic. He also said hiring U.S.-based lobbying firm to reverse current sanctions is a move to attract investors.
What is the meaning of sanctions were imposed because of the conflict? If there is no conflict and South Sudan is in peace, if there is a need for sanctions, if you look at the American unilateral sanctions, were they imposed because the U.S. has an issue with South Sudan, or were they imposed because they were related to conflict? If there is no conflict and we are calling American companies to invest, if there is need for sanctions, individual sanctions, you tell me.
Gainful Solutions could not be immediately reached for comment. This report was prepared by Ayen Deng Bio of VOA Sudan in Focus program. Five Christian worshippers and a pastor were reportedly killed this past Sunday in Burkina Faso by a group of armed men, according to a Burkina Faso government spokesman. Five teachers were also killed in a separate attack in Burkina Faso on April 26. No persons or groups have yet claimed responsibility for Sunday's attack, but jihadist attacks have increased in Burkina Faso in recent years. The United States has tripled security assistance to Burkina Faso, one of several West African nations battling extremists. But as viewers Carla Babb reports, U.S. officials are having to overcome some big challenges as they try to improve the country's law enforcement.
This sounds like the government of Burkina Faso's worst nightmare. In an instant, a friendly football game in the capital, Ouagadougou, turns into a terror zone. Luckily, what you're hearing is just a drill, organized and funded by the United States and international allies. U.S. Ambassador to Burkina Faso, Andrew Young, tells VOA this type of practice is crucial after a 2016 attack on Burkina Faso's capital exposed several weaknesses.
A response that wasn't up to the standards of the Burkinabe people. Partners like the United States and France helped end that terrorist attack.
Burkinabe Gendarmes First Lieutenant Robert Kampore says drills like this one have improved local law enforcement's ability to repel attacks, protect civilians, arrest suspected terrorists, and when that is done,
we have to save the scene and not destroy the evidence so that the other team of evidence, they can come and collect the evidence.
Here's what they do. They mark each piece of evidence first. Then they take a picture of it, and they log everything in order to build a criminal case. Again, U.S. Ambassador Andrew Young.
So we move from battlefield to custody, chain of custody, judicial process to accountability through the rule of law system. That's the key to success over the long term.
But the U.S. Embassy's regional security officer, Rosie Sandino, says there's a major hitch in that system. Terrorism cases are not going to trial.
So here in Burkina Faso, there are a lot of terrorism cases. And one of the challenges is that they haven't been able to prosecute a case just yet.
Sources familiar with Burkinabe terrorism cases tell VOA there are about 400 cases involving nearly 200 terror suspects imprisoned in Burkina Faso with no set trial date. Air Force Major General Marcus Hicks is the commander of U.S. Special Operations Forces in Africa.
Certainly, waiting trial indefinitely is not acceptable.
The government of Burkina Faso has not returned VOA request for comment. In response to the pileup, the U.S. Embassy has sent over a prosecutor from the Department of Justice to help the Burkinabe build and try these cases.
There'll be some progress that can be visible not only within the government, but that population could see that their system does work.
But since the U.S. legal advisor just arrived last month, it's unclear precisely when the people of Burkina Faso will finally see justice. Carla Babb, VOA News, Ouagadougou.
This year marks the 400th anniversary of the beginning of slavery in the United States. The first group of African slaves arrived in the state of Virginia in 1619. A number of activities are being planned this August to commemorate the anniversary. The American Colonization Society was founded in 1816 to send free African Americans back to Africa as an alternative to giving them freedom in the United States. In 1822, the society established in West Africa a colony that in 1847 became the independent nation of Liberia. Liberia's first president, Joseph Jenkins Roberts, was born in Virginia. Nathaniel Colley is chairperson of the American Colonization Society of Liberia. He's currently visiting Virginia, and I asked him why Liberia has an American Colonization Society.
The American Colonization Society is that which funded the state of Liberia in Africa. We're not colonizing anymore. We are empowering people and, what you say, creating jobs. My coming to Petersburg has to do with the American Colonization Society need to be restructured and reconnected to the United States, especially Virginia and Petersburg, after 203 years. We have been working with the government and people of Liberia and international partners for the reconstruction of Liberia. And it became a need that we go back to the States and allow Virginia to know her obligation.
I was wondering, who sponsors the American Colonization Society branch in Liberia?
The American Colonization Society extent has been sponsored by the USAID through grants and other faith-based organizations, especially the Ministry of Health and the government and people of Liberia.
You are here in Virginia, particularly the city of Petersburg. Have you found any historical links between Petersburg and Liberia?
There are many, many historical links between Liberia and Virginia. I was able to then take it on tour on Monday, where I visited a home of J.J. Roberts. It's still a structure standing before he left for Liberia. I was able to see the slave holding center of Harriet Tubman and her underground movement. And I was able to, on Tuesday, address the city council in a special section of Petersburg. I had a two-hour-long meeting with the police director and his senior staff.
Are you looking for, or is Liberia looking for, any cooperation between Liberia and the city of Petersburg or the people of Virginia?
Exactly. So we are looking for a sister city relationship for Liberia through the American Colonization Society. and we were able to touch on many issues, including the police, rule of law. We were able to touch on health. We were able to discuss on the building of a public library for the Republic. It's first kind in the history.
You mentioned Joseph Jenkins Roberts, the first president of Liberia. Now, the current president of Liberia is George Mani Weah. What are you finding during your visit?
Joseph Jenkins Roberts was not only the first president, he was also the seventh president of the Republic of Liberia. And I think it will be worthy with this president, Dr. George Mani Opon Weah, to make a historic visit to Petersburg and host the flag of the Republic of Liberia at the home of President J.J. Roberts.
As you know, 2019 is the 400th anniversary of slavery in the United States. What a unique connection to Liberia.
Exactly so. The first slave touched down at Jamestown in Petersburg, and it has very historic linkage with Liberia, because Liberia has been on the front page of emancipation and fight for the freedom of black people across the world.
Mr. Colley, we do thank you very much again for speaking with us on Daybreak Africa.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bartlett.
Nathaniel Colley is chairperson of the American Colonization Society of Liberia's Economic Development Commission. He was speaking with me from the city of Petersburg in the U.S. state of Virginia. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Ugandan opposition lawmaker Robert Chakulayi, better known as the singer Bobby Wine, has been taken to prison and charged with unlawful assembly for participating in a protest in July last year without police authorization. Police spokesman Fred Enenga said the director of public prosecutions decided to finally bring charges after months of investigation. Bobby Wine's arrest Monday followed battles between the police and his supporters, with police firing tear gas to disperse the crowds. The government of South Sudan will pay $3.7 million to Gainful Solutions, a U.S.-based lobbying firm managed by Michael Renenberger, former U.S. ambassador to Kenya. In the agreement disclosed by the Department of Justice's Foreign Agents Registration Act, South Sudan employed Gainful Solutions to work to delay and ultimately block the establishment of an African Union South Sudanese hybrid court, which would investigate international crimes and prosecute individuals responsible for violations during the country's civil war. The $3.7 million promised to Gainful Solutions include a $1.2 million non-refundable retainer, according to the disclosure. Gordon Bue, South Sudan's ambassador to the United States, who signed the agreement on behalf of South Sudan, distanced himself from allegations that South Sudan wanted to block the establishment of the hybrid court and added that the agreement with Gainful Solutions to repair relations with the United States. Sudan's opposition Popular Congress Party says it does not support the agreement between other opposition groups and the ruling military council to form a transitional government. Rather, the party says it has presented to the military council fresh proposals to expedite Sudan's quick transition to democratic rule. The proposals include a Christian from the Numba Mountains as new prime minister and independent Sudanese, including women, as members of the transitional government. And that's it for this Tuesday, April 30th edition of Daybreak Africa. I'm James Botti in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good day.
Hello. This is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.